Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now the earth was unformed and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the waters. And God said, Let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, one day. Later on in Genesis, we read, And God said, Let us make man in our image, except for Denis Kucinich, after our likeness, except for Denis Kucinich. And let them, that is man, have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, except for Denis Kucinich, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, including Denis Kucinich. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them, except in San Francisco. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, except in San Francisco. And have dominion over the fish of the sea, except in San Francisco. And over the fowl of the air and over every other living thing that creepeth upon the earth. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm sort of burned out, so I went to the Bible because it's a special night for our Jewish listeners. I know many of you, most of my listeners are either Christians or atheistic or agnostic. I would say perhaps 1% of my audience is of a Jewish identity. Perhaps of that 1%, 0.1% is religious. I would say 0.1% of my audience is Muslim. But since the foundation of our civilization is built upon God's word, that is the Jewish Bible, which then gave rise to the revelations of Jesus and the Christian Bible, I think it's important to mention that tonight marks the transition from year 5767 to 5768 in the Jewish calendar. Now you may say, well, what does that have to do with the price of beans? Well, nothing and everything, because when you think about it, for a people to have kept the calendar for almost 6,000 years is pretty amazing in a time, in the concept of the times we're living in the sense that we're in flux today. We don't know what's coming tomorrow. Many of us live a very insecure life, and we live only for today, fearing that there will be no real tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow because of so many reasons that they're not worth enumerating right now, not the least of which is there's nobody at the helm. There is nobody at the helm. There's two gangs of crooks robbing the treasury blind, and we the people know it in our guts. In fact, I'm sure that if George Bush were given a Walgreens to manage, well, let's say a box store, let's say after the presidency, George Bush was given a box store to manage, he would probably run out of money within 3 months due to mismanagement and then ask for a government bailout. I'm convinced that if Nancy Pelosi were given a box store to manage, the goods would disappear out the back door and she would not know why it went bankrupt. I'm sure that if John McCain were given a box store to manage, it would catch fire suddenly for inexplicable reasons. I'm sure that if Denis Kucinich were given a box store to manage, he would open it up to the homeless and then ask for a government handout once it was bankrupted. In other words, most of the people who were running the country or would run the country have never run a hot dog stand. They don't know the first thing about running a business. Now, if you can't run a business, how can you run a country? The answer is you can't, which is why they can't. And that's why we're all pretty sickened by it. The only one amongst them who's actually run a business that I can tell who's a real candidate is Mr. Romney, who not only ran businesses, but built a fortune by running businesses. I have to respect that. Hillary is a career politician. Obama's never run a hot dog stand. Go down the list. None of them are business people. At the end of the day, you need somebody who understands the basics of business. You know what I'm saying? How about Shoegate? How is that resonating in America? I've named it Shoegate today. Now, it's normally you would think it's spelled S-H-O-E hyphen gate, but it's H-S-U gate. And I believe this one's going to stick to Hillary. Suddenly, the $23,000 in donation from the mysterious Mr. Shu has turned into $850,000. Who knows what it'll be next week? So we don't really know. We don't really know. You would talk about corruption. Here's a story that will make your hair stand up. Just out minutes ago, Google founders pay NASA $1.3 million to land at Moffett Airfield, is how they put it in the newspaper. Now, the real headline is Google founders bribe NASA $1.3 million to use Moffett Field as private airfield. That's my opinion. Google Inc.'s founders will carry scientific equipment for NASA on their private Boeing 767. As part of the deal, it grants them landing rights at Moffett Federal Airfield. Now, let me explain something to you. Civilian aircraft are barred from this federal airfield. Moffett Field has long been a source of conflict with neighboring cities. The people there are concerned about noise, as anybody would be living near an airport, and they never wanted private planes to land at Moffett Field because of the noise. And NASA, which has control over Moffett Field, grants permission only to planes that are related to its research and mission. So listen to this big one. This is a real whopper. We learned today that the founders of Google, who own a private 767, which is a phenomenally interesting story unto itself, are now going to be landing at this federal airfield owned by NASA because they're going to carry scientific equipment on their jet and pay $1.3 million to land there. Now, let me tell you something. What do you think it would cost to land and to hangar a 767 per year at SFO? Do you think it would be $1.3 million or do you think it would be a little higher? We'll take those calls in a moment. Moreover, most of the flights by Google's founders have no link to research, as you well know. A flight by their 767 from Moffett Field to Seville, Spain last week, for example, where Google was holding a sales conference, had no science component. That's even admitted by the corrupt NASA officials. So it shows you that in the San Francisco Bay Area, corruption rules the day. Even the feds can be bribed in the San Francisco Bay Area. But this is just the beginning. 2 years ago, the Google founders signed a deal with NASA to collaborate on a number of projects, which nobody knows what they are, and to build up to 1 million square feet of office space on federal land. But that's nothing new. Feinstein and Boxer oversaw the destruction of the Presidio for private gain, as you well know. So that's why I read the Bible. The corruption in America today is at a biblical level. If you read the Bible, you know what it's about? It's about corruption and people who heard the word of God and tried their best to turn away from corruption. And so the whole book of the ancients was about trying to straighten out people who had gone wrong and to try to help people at that time to not go wrong. I mean, if you want to call it mythology and storytelling and this and that, you can do that. You can dismiss it as such if you wish. I mean, it's your decision. It's a free country. Some of the rules make sense. To some of you, the rules are abominable. You'd like to burn the Bible. For example, the communists listening to this show would hate Deuteronomy, where it says, "For the poor shall never cease out of the land." Did you hear that? In other words, even the Bible said there will always be poor. So the lie of Marxism is that you can rectify and justify the failings of other humans or the less fortunate by making them equal to everyone else. Of course, it doesn't work. Of course, there's another part to that. For the poor shall never cease out of the land. God says, "Therefore, I command you, saying, thou shalt truly open thy hand unto the poor and needy brother in thy land," which we do. We're the most generous nation on earth with regard to taking care of the less fortunate and the outright bum and swindler on welfare. "Thou shalt not oppress thy neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of a hired servant shall not above." You get the whole picture. "Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thy heart. Thou shalt not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against this and that." Now listen to this one. "Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. Did you hear that one? That's a good one. That's for you people who like to play God with the genetic engineering. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. Now, what does that mean? That means you shouldn't mate a cow with a pig, or a cow with a horse, or a human with an ape. You understand that? Thou shalt not sow thy field with two kinds of seed. Why? Why would God have said, don't sow thy field with two kinds of seed? You hear that? It's amazing, some of this stuff. It's amazing stuff, and it's an awful lot of rules to follow, I understand, which is why so many religious people drink continuously as part of their belief system. I'm joking. Look, I have a wicked sense of humor with regard to myself and everything around me. So what can I do? What can I do? At a certain point, you know, cynicism has its limits. When you're laying there racked with pain and screaming to God, all of your jokes go away. So I have to hope that God likes his jokesters. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. I invite you to call from anywhere in the United States of America to the over 300 and some odd affiliates that take this wonderful program, or visit me online at michaelsavage.com. Now I will take your calls. Darn it, I will take your calls. KNEW, Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mr. Savage. I believe that having Google land at that facility at the Moffett Field is actually it's a good thing. I think in a time of war, we'd want our major companies, you know, somewhat intertwined with the government. I've been to NASA Ames Research many times. I do work
there. Why only Google? There are many private millionaires who live in the Mountain View area who want to land on Moffett Field. Why only these guys?
Well, because they're doing a lot of work with the government right now. So I think it's a good idea. You know, we have Homeland Security.
Wait, hold on. You think it's a good idea for private billionaires to use federal aviation land to land their 767? You're really pulling my leg, aren't you?
I think if they're working with the government at this
How is Google working with the government? As far as I can tell, Google is ripping off the government and the taxpayer by using military technology that was released to them, which never should have been released to them. I have been opposed to Google Earth from the day it first came on the scene. I told you it would be used for harm, not for good. Now, how do you did Google? Let me ask you something. These two cretins who founded Google, did they develop the technology to use these satellites? Are they their satellites that are being used to disseminate the Google Earth imagery?
Perhaps they did not develop the technology, but
no, they didn't develop any of it. It's government, military, hardware, and technology that these two gonoffs somehow gleaned for themselves in this broadcaster's opinion. This stinks to high heaven. Somebody in the federal government should go to jail, as far as I'm concerned. Have a nice break. I'll be back.
Savage.
You know, in a time when your children are being brainwashed with lies to hate America, to hate mother, to hate father, to hate flag, and to hate country, to hate God himself, it's very important that you frankly bring the Bible to them, as far as I'm concerned. It is the Rock of Ages for that reason. Don't think this is the only time in history that such abject cynicism ruled the land. It's happened many times, many, many times. It'll happen many, many times again. But at the end of the day, the Rock of Ages shall survive. God's word shall survive, and the others shall disappear. Let me give you an example. You have children in school being told that it's equal for a boy to marry a boy and a girl to marry a girl, as it was for his mother and father to marry, and as it was for his grandfather and grandmother to marry. You understand that that's mentally ill, and it's sick. It's demented. It should never be permitted to be taught in a school. But the perverts have taken over the National Education Association. They run most of the enterprises of education in this country, or let us say too many of them. And so that is why they hate the Bible. It's why they hate religion. Because the Bible's very clear. God said it is not good. It is not good that man should be alone. And I will make him a helpmeet for him. And then God looks for a match for man, and he looks through all of the animals that he has made, and whatever he made, and he gave them a name to the cattle and the fowl and the fish. And he could not find a match for man amongst them. And so he causes a deep sleep to fall upon man. Man sleeps. And he takes Adam's rib, as it were. You've heard the story, Adam's rib. And he takes one of his ribs and closed up the place with flesh instead. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from the man made he a woman and brought her unto the man. Now, you may say that's mythological, it's physiologically impossible, but listen to the poetry that follows. This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. It's so beautiful, actually, when you think about it. It's beautiful in its simplicity and its romance and its romanticism. And we don't hear it. We hear cynicism. And what do we see? We don't even see women represented anymore. We see white trash puking on themselves on drugs. They don't even represent the human form anymore. When you look at the white trash that the media magnifies into everyone's head, the vermin, the white trash vermin held up as role models, it's enough to make any man turn in pain and disgust from his own society, that they would permit white trash like this to be held up as role models. A serpent is to be prized more than the vermin on Sunset Boulevard that we see every day without panties, vomiting on themselves, going in and out of rehab. They should all, as far as I'm concerned, go into rehab and stay there and never come out of it. But look at the beauty of this. It is not good that the man should be alone. God says, I'm going to make him a helpmeet. He makes the woman, however it happens. But listen to this beauty. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Now, the feminists would say, that's interesting, that although they find it offensive to think that a woman, according to biblical tractate, is derived from man and therefore she's subordinate to man, this phrase would indicate otherwise. It says, and he shall cleave unto his wife. It didn't say she shall cleave unto the man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife. Isn't that beautiful? Don't you see the balance that God created? So we'll move on from Genesis. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Now, some would think that radical Muslims have modified that from therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife. And the radical Muslims thought that that meant and shall take a cleaver unto his wife. But that cannot be confirmed or denied. But you see, there's many interpretations of the original Hebrew. Somehow when it got translated into the Arabic, they think that the radical Islamists thought that it said they shall take a cleaver unto his wife. But we'll have to look into that. We'll have to get a theological expert. Tom on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. As a religious person that's listening to you each day, and as an appreciation for you coming on each day and keeping us insane, I feel I owe you a blessing for the new year. As you had the last.
Thank you. It means a lot to me. Let me tell you, I have no cynicism when it comes to blessings from strangers.
As we head towards sundown over here in New York, and I will bless you like the last 365 days was your health and you were strong and everything. The same thing.
Thank you. It's nice to hear that. It's very beautiful. I got to tell you, I know many Catholics have lit candles for me, and it's good to know that the Jews are doing so, too, because I certainly could need it after the hatred that's been inflicted upon me by the vermin in San Francisco, these atheistic soulless ghouls who disguise themselves as compassionate people, Tom. Tom, doesn't the Bible write about people like this who pretend to be good and kind but are really evil behind the scenes? What does the Bible say about the type of people who run San Francisco?
Michael, I want to tell you something. I don't think it's even worth talking about them. I think it's enough. One thing that I do want to tell you, you should know that a lot more rabbis and Jewish people listen to you than I think. I have first-hand information of the biggest, most largest congregations, Jewish rabbis, religious and Hasidic rabbis listen to you.
You know what? Why don't you invite me and I'll speak gladly for free, because I need friends right now. I feel such hatred in the air in my own community that I would travel across the country to speak before friends. Tom, thank you very much. Give Tom your address So now we're going to go from religion to something else. I'll tell you a book I read over the last few days. It was Omerta by Mario Puzo. Say, what? How's he jumping like that? Who knows? Who knows how the mind of Michael Savage works? The final chapter of Mario Puzo's landmark mafia trilogy. He wrote, of course, The Godfather. He wrote other books. But this book, Omerta, I read it, I think. I don't know, because I reread it and didn't remember I read it, but I remembered one scene of the two twins getting killed. But this book has not been turned into a movie. It would be a good film if it was done. Mario Puzo was terrific. He was the Maupassant of American literature. He was actually quite a heck of a writer. He wrote terrific screenplays, including those for Earthquake, Superman, and all the Godfather movies. So Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather, wrote this book, Omerta. I'm not going to bore you with the book or this, but I had seen two things I had underlined, which apparently means I read it 6 years ago when it came out. And this is an important one for you police out there and you people in the police professions. And he was talking about how corrupt, how the so-called civil rights activists demoralized police. And here's the paragraph. He's talking about how a cop went corrupt and started taking money. He started out honest. He took no bribes. I'll read it to you. Di Benedetto had joined the force as a young man over 30 years ago. His corruption had been gradual but inevitable. He had started out with delusions of grandeur. He would be respected and admired for risking his life to protect others. But the years wore this way. At first, it was the little bribes from the street vendors and small shops. Then testifying falsely to help a guy beat a felony rap. It seemed a small step to accepting money from high-ranking drug dealers. Then finally from Heskow, who it was clear acted for Timona Portella, the biggest mafia chief left in New York. But listen to where he goes with this. Of course, there was always a good excuse. The mind can sell itself anything. You hear that one? The mind can sell itself anything. He saw the higher-ranking officers getting rich on drug bribe money, and the lower ranks were even more corrupt. And after all, he had three kids to send to college. But most of all, it was the ingratitude of the people he protected. Civil liberties groups protesting police brutality if you slapped a black mugger around. The news media crapping on the police department every chance they got. Citizens suing cops. Cops getting fired after years of service deprived of their pensions, even going to jail. He himself had once been brought up for discipline on the charge that he singled out black criminals and he knew he wasn't racially prejudiced. Was it his fault that most criminals in New York were black? What were you supposed to do, give them a license to steal as affirmative action? Now remember, this is all fiction. He had promoted black cops. He had been Aspinella's mentor in the department, giving her the promotion she'd earned by terrorizing the same black criminals. And you couldn't accuse her of racism. In a nutshell, society dumped on the cops who protected them. Unless, of course, they got killed in the line of duty. Then came the tide of BS. The final truth? It didn't pay to be an honest cop, and yet, he had never thought it would come to murder. But after all, he was invulnerable. There was no risk. There was a heck of a lot of money, and the victim was a killer. Still, so it's the musings of a corrupt cop who takes a contract to kill while in uniform. And it was written by Mario Puzo. It's a very interesting analysis on the stages of corruption and how it starts very, very small, you know, an apple from the stand, as it were, and it could end up with murder. Because as you well know, corruption is very, very slithery, to put it to you that way. Anyway, that's the whole story. Today is a weird day. I've had a really weird, weird day. Now, I'm going to tell you a personal story that if you think I'm making it up, I don't blame you. Because what I'm about to tell you could only be made up. It's something, if you saw what I'm about to tell you happened to someone on a sitcom, let's say you had a glass of wine or a beer and you're watching like a dopey little show, and you say, it's funny. But if it happens to you and you're busy and you really wanted it not to happen, it can make you almost crazy. I'm a kind of guy who can deal with big problems. The problems of the world for me are easy for me to sort and deal with. But the daily grind, the little things, the dry cleaners, I go insane from them. I cannot take stupidity. I don't suffer fools gladly. And the little things drive me totally crazy. So here's the story. I have various places that I live in and broadcast from for obvious reasons, and I've told you that before. So I left a certain sport jacket, only one sport jacket in a closet in the city in a particular place I have, and I didn't want to go there today to get it, but I needed it tonight. So I say to a certain person, when you go in there, go into the hall closet, you'll find a tan jacket on a hanger in a suit bag, and it looks like a camel hair jacket. Next to it is a yellow shirt with a tie on another hanger, and there's a pair of black pants hanging on the door. Bring it to me. 3 hours later, I get the pair of black pants, the yellow shirt and a tie, and not the camel hair sport jacket, which any person would figure out goes with the outfit, but an overcoat, a tan overcoat that you'd wear in the middle of the winter. I say to the guy who brought it, I said, why would I wear an overcoat to dinner tonight and not a jacket? No answer. I said, did I ask you for an overcoat or a sport jacket? No answer. Meanwhile, the time is ticking and I need it tonight for a dinner I'm going to. So there was a maid in the apartment, a house cleaner, was cleaning it. So I said, call her up and tell her to bring the darn jacket here. I need it tonight. 2 hours go by, an hour before the show. Here it is. Again, the wrong jacket. He didn't tell her the right jacket to get. He didn't tell her the tan one that looked like. Instead, it was some like loose fit. Look, it's just one of those days. I mean, I don't know how to tell you. It's something that if you saw on a Seinfeld, you'd laugh. But if it happened to you, it's enough to make a tooth fall out. I don't know the meaning of it other than I do know the meaning of it. I actually do know the meaning of it. I really do know the meaning of it. But I don't even want to go into this. Too trivial. Now, as I said to you earlier, the incompetence at the level of the government is so great that if George Bush was given a box store to run, the products would run out and the register would break down within a week, and he would ask for the government to print more money. If Dennis Kucinich ran a box store like a Walgreens, a big one, he turned it into a homeless shelter and it would be ransacked. Then he would ask for a government bailout. If McCain ran a box store, it would burn down within 90 days and he'd ask for a government bailout. If Giuliani ran a box store, he'd have all the employees arrested on bunco charges, and then he'd ask for government a bailout. If Hillary ran a box store, she'd impose diversity training, and then after 6 months, fire all the men. If Obama ran a box store, he'd hire Jesse Jackson to run diversity training classes. He'd hire Al Sharpton to lure people inside with a bullhorn, and then he would impose affirmative action on the hiring, and they would go bankrupt. That's the faith I have in who's running for office. As you can see, it's not too much of that thing called faith. 1-800-449-8255. As you can see, even my dog is nervous today. Even my dog is nervous from the service. It is a day that is out of control. Oh, here's some good news. The LA Times. Too liberal for UC Irvine. Erwin Chemerinsky won't be the law school's dean, and he says it's all politics. Do you know who Erwin Chemerinsky is? I do. Yeah, his name rings a bell, a big, big bell, but it's not a Liberty bell. Erwin Chemerinsky is one of the most red-diaper, dope-a-baby, left-wing vermin ever to come out of a law school. And he is shocked that they didn't make him the dean of the University of California at Irvine. You see, he had been a professor at Duke since 04, after 21 years at USC, and this, and Berkeley, and blah. But if you read the whole article, you'll find out who Erwin Chemerinsky is. And you'll find out that it was Erwin Chemerinsky who worked hand in glove with the ACLU over the years to undermine the will of the people. So we learned today that just days after he signed a contract to become the first dean of UC Irvine's new law school, Erwin Chemerinsky, poor baby, was told this week that the deal was off because he was too politically controversial. Isn't that something? I would think that Erwin Chemerinsky shouldn't give up. I think Erwin Chemerinsky should get a job in Syria or in Russia where he belongs. Now, of course, the LA Times calls him one of the nation's best known, now I'm going to quote now without vomiting, constitutional scholars, and a liberal professor. Now, when the LA Times calls someone liberal, you know that they're a communist. That's how they work, because there is no such thing as a liberal to the LA Times and the New York Times. But when they say you're a liberal, you know you're a certifiable communist. That's all. WOR in New York, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation.
Oh, good evening, Michael. I'm a retired New York City detective, and as our blood flows in the streets like water, ruthless politicians use us to get reelected. Hero, with the help of...
Well, hold. You keep calling the show with a story, and please, nobody's allowed on my show with a slip-in of a website. And we can't control it, but I'm not giving out anyone's website. For all I know, it could have naked women on it. I don't want to do that. I'm not doing it. Particularly now it's 5768 tonight. Now, I can't risk it after 6,000 years. I'm not going to do it. I had a strange ailment to come down upon me in the last few days. My left hand, I never had any arthritic pain. My My left hand became a claw. I couldn't move it. Oh, did you see the story in the Chinese restaurant? Wait a minute. Hold it. That could explain it. Worker who prepped food underfoot fired. I was wondering what went on in the restaurant. I thought maybe it was the mustard seed last Saturday. Stomping on, this comes out of Nanuet, New York. Stomping on garlic with your shoes is apparently not the correct way to prepare food. The Rockland County Health Department hit the Great China Buffet restaurant with two violations after someone took pictures of an employee stomping on a bowl of garlic with his boots in an alley. The photographer alerted health inspectors. He said, I go back there and the guy's stepping on garlic, said Dan Barreto, who used to eat at the restaurant. There he was, just jumping up and down and smashing it up, having a good time. The health department does not consider a person's shoe or boot a proper instrument to use in food preparation, said senior public health sanitarian John Stoughton. It was a novel way to prepare food, he acknowledged. Now, do you understand what's happening in this country as the third world continues to flood into our country and bring their demented, sick, perverted, polluted ways to our country? Do you understand this? Have you gone in restaurants and seen signs that say, wash your hands thoroughly before touching food? Yeah, they're in English. Anyone who reads English usually washes their hands thoroughly, either before eating food or handling it. We've been brainwashed properly all our lives. Now, it should be lave los manos, but you don't see too many of the signs in Spanish, do you? No, because that would be racist. So instead, they continue to put it out in English, and anyone who really needs to read it needs to read Spanish. But where bilingual education is really required, you don't find it. And where it's not really required, you always find it. That's America today, which is why most of you are sick when your head feels like it's spinning every day. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back. Savage. To show you how twisted our society has become, California has the newest minority. Do you know what the newest minority is in California? The majority are unwed. Who is the newest minority in California? Married couples. For the first time in at least 50 years, this is what the homosexual lobby has done to the mind of mankind. They have made heterosexual men and women act as though they're gay to go out simply for sexual pleasure, not for marriage and family. And consequently, our society is dying. I know exactly how this disease operates, and I know exactly what is causing this disease to continue to disseminate and to proliferate. Here's another wonderful story from the elites running the country. And by the way, Bush has said nothing in years on the issue of cultural values. Borders, language, culture. Borders he broke. Language, it doesn't matter because he speaks in broken Spanish and broken English. And culture, he said nothing on any of these issues. What do you want me to do, sit here and tell you that he's a wonderful president and give him time? How much time do you want to give the man? Number of immigrants hits record 37.5 million. Nearly one in five people living in the United States speaks a language at home other than English. A house divided cannot stand. We the people know that the elites are breaking this country's borders, language, and culture. We know they're doing it on purpose. It's not solely for cheap labor. Make no mistake about it. It is not solely for cheap labor because there are many able-bodied welfare recipients who could be made to do these horrible jobs. If you forced them to, they would do it. In other words, if it came down to you're not getting your welfare check or you're going to pick that that vegetable, they pick the vegetable. That's what people had to do in the past. They want a Tower of Babel here. The elites want a Tower of Babel so they can better control the peasant. The way they control the peasant is by turning the nation into a Tower of Babel and breaking the cohesion of the white male. That's exactly what they're doing here. Make no mistake about it. And those doing it are white males. Make no mistake about that. You understand how it works? You don't. Most of you can't get it. You still want to believe it's only the Democrats, but I won't bore you with the details. Here's a YouTube thing of what leftist scum look like on michaelsavage.com. All of those stories, by the way, are on my website. Leftist scum that desecrate U.S. flag at 9/11 Memorial, and you could see the police at San Francisco State doing nothing. You could see the useless police at the university doing nothing while anti-American vermin trample the flag and threaten the people trying to hold a 9/11 memorial. It's disgraceful. Those two police officers should be fired immediately, as far as I am concerned. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Any topic is not fair game. What do you want to talk about in this hour? There's so many topics, for God's sakes, from poison food to poison societies to poison cultural values, the unfairness doctrine. The unfairness doctrine is a new article I wrote that just came out in the Inside Radio magazine, which is going to be published in a special issue of the National Association of Broadcasters. It's under opinion by Michael Savage, The Unfairness Doctrine. I'll have more to say about it maybe the next hour. Nick, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Honored to speak to you. I'm calling you. Maybe I get some advice from you. About 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I graduated from Fordham, and I headed out to Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin. Heavy liberal school. I lasted about 9 months there. I had to come home. I had to get out of there. 25 years later, my daughter, she graduated here up in Guilford, Connecticut, and now she's out in Wisconsin. She's a liberal. She's a conservative on most views. She studies all the views. Just wondering if you'd give us some advice. I know you went to Berkeley, and how she'd be able to survive out there.
Well, you gave me one key. She's already going in with a conservative orientation. That's already 90% of the battle, Nick.
She looked at every issue, takes every issue one-on-one, and we live in a very liberal...
Well, if she's willing to argue with the morons, she's going to have a good time of it. She's got to join with some people there. I suppose there's a young Republicans group. I don't know how conservative they really are. As you know, I'm not a Republican, but it's a better choice than the young than the socialist Marxists of America, isn't it?
Oh yeah. One piece of advice: I turned on the radio, and you can actually get you out there in Wisconsin.
That's so right. I'll keep your daughter sane with God's will. Don't worry about it. It'll be like she never left home. You know, I have kids who started listening to me when they were like 10, who are now 25. It's hard to believe. I've had people meet each other through my show and get married. This is like Methuselah for me already. I thought this would last maybe a year. This is going on forever.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is amazing to me how quickly Marxism has taken over Europe. Yesterday in Europe, a group of white men stood up and said that they want to stop the Islamization of Europe. They were immediately arrested by the socialists. Now, I want to read you something. The Secretary General of the Council of Europe, Terry Davis, condemned the white males who stood up for their own nation and said the following. He said, "It is very important to remember that the freedom of assembly and expression can be restricted to protect the rights and freedoms of others. I don't think you understand what doublespeak really is. I don't think you understand how quickly Europe has descended into a soft Marxism. But when you see white male socialists attacking white male nationalists and dismissing their rights under the European Constitution, saying that the freedom of assembly and expression can be restricted to protect the rights and freedoms of others, then there is no freedom. There's no reason for a freedom of assembly if a government can eliminate it at a whim. There is no such thing as a freedom of expression if it can be eliminated at the whim of a bureaucrat. Now, if it was only happening in Europe, it would be worrisome enough, because the March of Islam is a global thing. The March of Islam can be seen around the globe. And here is a very dangerous precedent, but it's not only happening there, it's happening here as well. Several weeks ago, a group of illegal aliens, primarily from Mexico, whipped up by white liberal communist lawyer scum from hell right here in the Bay Area, who wrote their signs for them. the white liberal lawyer scum who get federal money and God knows what else, wrote the signs for the illegal aliens, and they try to get me thrown off the air. And some of the signs are amazingly similar to what was said in Europe, where they said, some of the signs said, this is not the savage nation. This is America. You have no right to say what you want. So here it says, it's very important to remember that the freedom of assembly and expression can be restricted to protect the rights and freedoms of others, including the freedom of thought. Can you believe this? This is unbelievable to me. But this is the direction that the West is going in. It truly is the death of the West. Here's another story. U.S. has Iranian missile debris after attack. U.S. military officials in Iraq tell ABC News that a rocket used in an attack on coalition headquarters at Camp Victory yesterday was made in Iran. Missed its target, but it wounded 11 coalition troops, killed one foreign workers, and now the military is going to hold up pieces of the rocket at a press conference on Thursday. Now, my answer is, don't bother. I'm sick and tired of Israel complaining about Syria. I'm sick and tired about hearing about Gaza and rockets in Israel and Israel wringing its hands and telling me that they fired a rocket into a training camp. Well, it's too darn bad. We've given you billions and billions and billions of dollars in American military equipment. And if you're too idiotic to use it, or you're too politically compromised to use it, then you're going to lose it. There's an old adage, either use it or lose it. It applies not only to military hardware, but to everything else in the world. What's the point of giving Israel billions of dollars a year in military aid if all they're going to do is wring their hands and say, oh, we have proof that the Qassam rocket came from Gaza? Well, what do you want? Pinchy Sulzberg of the New York Times to say, to wring his hands and say, now you have a green light to strike back? Who are you asking for permission? Who, David? Who are you waiting for? You have a quisling running your government named Olmert with a lower rating than George Bush. 10%, 9%, 8% of the people, and you keep him in office. And you let your boys get killed. What do you want from us in America? Likewise here. I am so sick and tired of these complainers in the military holding up rockets and say, oh, look, it's a 240-millimeter rocket. Look, it has Iranian markings. We want to show the link between Iranian weapons and the damage they're doing. Well, if the Iranians can fire rockets from Sadr City and you don't have withal from George Bush to strike back, then believe me, you've lost the war three different ways to Sunday. This is the most disgusting story I've ever seen. A U.S. military commander holding up a rocket saying, we want to show the link between the Iranian weapons and the damage they're doing. That, again, is the beaten wife syndrome. Look, I have a black eye. And I'm a videotape of my husband hitting me. What are you going to do about it? Please help me. Who are you asking for any help, Major? You have all the weapons in the world, the most advanced technology in the world, but you have the most incompetent commander-in-chief the world has ever seen. So don't ask me for approval, is what I'd like to say. But since I have no audience and I don't exist, and this is simply a fiction, and there is no Savage Nation, there are no 300 and some odd affiliates, there are no best-selling books, and Michael Savage doesn't exist, then what I've just said doesn't matter at all. What matters is what you read in the newspaper written by some hack for the New York Times. Vermont, Frank, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor to speak to you, and especially after what I went through last night. And when I tell you this story, I want to know if you want to reflect on the old neighborhood, Fresh Meadows, Queens, where I'm
No, 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 no old man nostalgia yet. Tell me what happened last night.
Forget that. Anyway, so I moved to Vermont 2 years ago, and I'm looking for a little something to do here. Came here for the scenery, not the people.
Right. So I see it's a gorgeous state. Vermont is heartbreakingly beautiful. I used to go there. I used to like that it was a Rock River Republican state. Good, honest, Yankee type of people. Then it was infected by the people from the Upper West Side who brought their communist socialist ideology from Manhattan and all of the crime and pollution that they left behind, they brought with them.
Just the old-timers. And the ones that come in here, they don't even want it. They want to bring New York cake. They want to bring cake here with shaved chocolate on it and sell it for $45. These people don't want that. But in any case, I want...
What do they say to you? Can't find a good deli up here, huh? You can't get a corned beef, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't get a good corned beef up here, huh?
Exactly.
To go with the bun meeting.
Manchester, Vermont has become Bronxville meets New York, if you're familiar with Bronxville, Westchester. But in any case, I go to this debate by these two well-credentialed and doctored guys, one against global warming, saying it's unproven, the other guy saying that the facts are in your face. So I go there, and I'm saying to my wife, should I wear my Savage T-shirt, liberalism, mental disorder? I said, yeah, why not? I said, so why not? Meanwhile, I got the sleeves cut off, and it's Vermont. I got my work shoes on. I go there. Lo and behold, I go to this. It's at the Burton Burton Academy, which is one of the top three ranked public schools in the country. I go there, and people are in, you know, typical uniform for the people we just discussed. Loafers with pennies in it, no socks, Dockers, burnt-out hippies, men with makeup, women with not one stitch of makeup on, and gray hair and braids.
Oh, anyway, in other words, the witch look.
Yes, yes.
The witch look. In other words, they call it natural, you call it witch-like.
Yeah, I call it, how can I be a woman and make myself look not like one as best as possible?
How can I be a woman and make myself look like a witch? Answer,
yeah.
Just don't wear makeup.
So anyway, I go into this, I'm on standby. I find I have my tickets in advance, so they get me in there. So I go sit in the balcony. I thought this was going to be like a 40-person assembly. It's like about 300 people there, which is a big...
Oh, yeah, in Vermont, that's a religious revival meeting, global warming.
So I'm listening to this debate, and now they're taking the Q&A. So I try to ask a question. Yeah, I'm going to ask a question. Meanwhile, I ask my wife, what are people doing? She goes, people are staring at the back of your shirt. They're looking at you like, how did you get in here? So anyway, the shocker is, when you want to ask a question, you got to go down to the first floor, because I'm sitting in the balcony, walk up to the front like you're taking communion in a church, stand
yeah.
in the microphone, ask your question. So I go up there, and my back is to the upper section in the back, and everybody sees liberalism as a mental disorder. Meanwhile, out of the 300 people there, I don't say if the shoe fits where, there's about 290 of them wearing the shoe. So,
yeah.
My point was, and I want to see if you could just kind of critique how I did here. The fellow that said global warming is really just unproven, he really didn't do so well because the other fellow had all the facts and figures. So I said as follows: I said, listen, we cannot argue all your data you've collected and the legitimacy of carbon in the air, greenhouse gases, but I said. The problem with this thinking is that, like all liberalism, you cannot say something, a concept is fact, simply because the concept exists. I said, this is a concept. I said, there's so many, they proceeded to show how to grasp.
Anyway, let's slow down. To the average person at a meeting, what you said is true, but they can't grasp it. Let me give you one statement you could use next time. It's just went up on michaelsavage.com. A new analysis of peer-reviewed scientific literature reveals that more than 500 scientists have published evidence refuting at least one element of current man-made global warming scares.
Well, here's what
500 new studies have published evidence countering man-made global warming fears. 500 new studies. And I can give you one fact after another, but that's all you have to say. Because what they're saying is that the evidence is in, no legitimate scientist refutes it anymore. That's Al Gore's lie. It's nonsense. And we're talking about articles published in journals such as Science, Nature, Geophysical Review Letters. These scientists have gotten little media attention. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, this guy was talking about the models, the computer models. I said, look, I said, I'm going to give you a model right now. I said, are you telling me that all the studies are in, the verdict is in? He's saying, yes, the studies are in. I said, I'm going to give you one study right now. We're in this room in Vermont. I don't know what the temperature is when we got in here. But I'll tell you one thing, it sure is a hell of a lot hotter right now because all these people. I said, I'm just a dummy.
No, but we're getting off the mark here. I just told you that 500 studies that came out last year in legitimate journals refute all of this man-made global warming alarmism. Moreover, to get very specific, none of these people mention, and you wanted me to get scientific and do a PhD talk for 2 seconds, no mention of confidence intervals. No mention of tests of hypotheses, no mention of levels of confidence, levels of significance, no mention of how the data was collected, no mention of methods and procedures for maintaining ethical integrity, the invasion of politics into a scientific matter. This climate question is astonishing religion.
I told him that this is...
It's really global warming religion. 500 scientists may not be a majority, but that's an awful lot of scientists. Who are voicing opposition to Al Gore's ridiculousness. And for the closed-minded liberals of Vermont and elsewhere who want to believe that global warming is real, they've adopted it like a religion, and Al Gore is the chief priest. This is propaganda.
It's a way for elitists to try to control the masses. I said, because once this gets ran down your throat, I turned around. I started speaking to people. I said, you know, first of all, you guys like to go off-road in your vehicles. You have a lot of carnivals here, all gas, petroleum-using things. I said, when are they going to come into your house and say you can't take your kid on a go-kart? You can't have a carnival because it's a gas.
But again, look, 500 scientists who refute global warming published in major journals is very significant. But have you heard about them, Frank? No. Have you seen them debate? No. Why does the media not cover the scientists who refute it? Why do you never hear such a public debate on C-SPAN owned by that little creep who runs C-SPAN because he's a major propagandist? Look, it's well established that humans are responsible for no more than 5% of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Nature creates most of the rest of it. The majority of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is coming from volcanic activity. Moreover, you say, well, some of the polar ice caps are melting, which is true. But do you know that ice is melting on other planets as well? How could they be melting on other planets as well if it was not caused by something extraterrestrial rather than from mankind?
Correct.
Frank, it's pure common sense that nobody wants pollution. It's common sense. None of us want pollution. I'm all for the car that runs on the sun's energy. But to see so many liberal fools following this global warming nonsense as though it's a religion, and not willing to debate the facts when they present themselves right before their eyes, shows you that they're a bunch of brainwashed boobs.
Well, the people there, the populace at this place, as typical liberals, they insist, they don't want to hear what you have to say, meaning media.
Right. All right, well, will you do me a favor and go on to michaelsavage.com and download that article I just put up today showing, it doesn't spell out all the articles. It shows a challenge to scientific consensus on global warming. Analysis finds hundreds of scientists have published evidence countering man-made global warming fears. And it's very clear you could throw this in their face, Frank. You know what I'm saying? Secondly, I want to thank you for having the guts. It would take a guy like you from Fresh Meadows to stand up to that liberal crowd of socialist fascists. Stay on the line. Is 26 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Savage Nation. Ralph Nader will be on this show at 34 or 35 minutes after the hour to discuss the abomination of Mexican trucks rolling across America's highways without a debate, without a discussion, just simply by the fiat of an executive out of control called George Bush. Right now, we'll go to the callers, tell your friends about the Nader interview coming up. Jack on KNEW, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Michael. Happy Rosh Hashanah, and big fan of Natural Radio. I want to tell you, as an agnostic, I find no program that you do more interesting when you talk about Bible stories and things like that. I really love it.
And this is a great call, but what is an agnostic, so people know what you're talking about?
How I define it for myself is that I believe in a creator, but I don't necessarily go along with organized religion. I think that if there...
No, I understand that. So therefore, when I read from a Bible which is from organized religion, the Word of God, after all, is transmitted only by organized religion, why do you find that appealing?
Because I am not sitting in a room with a bunch of other people sitting there absolutely humorless, emotionless, mumbling the Lord's Prayer like it's some rote mantra.
So in other words, when I interpret the Bible and put a human face on it, it becomes acceptable to even analyze it, but the mumbo jumbo is what you don't like.
It becomes interesting. It becomes interesting, and I can put it into context, into everyday life.
That's what I do. I sometimes will interpret the Bible in the terms of daily life, or try to give it meaning in that way. Well, I'm glad I don't do this too often because it's always a risk. You know, there's a lot of people say, "What, the Bible on public? On commercial radio?" Yeah, the Bible on commercial radio. Would I have to go to Brian Lamb for approval? Whose approval do I need to read the Bible on the radio? Tell me, who says I can't do it? What law does it violate?
Savage.
It is 34 minutes after the hour. This is the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about the shock of Mexican trucks rolling across America without any congressional debate, without any public interest, with nothing. It seems as though by the waving of a hand, George Bush has opened up America to Mexican trucks. And we're going to speak with a man who is one of the most influential Americans of the 20th century, who has done an awful lot in exposing some of the dangers in our society, some of which I may agree with, some I disagree with. It doesn't matter. Ralph Nader took on the Goliath of the auto industry with his book, Unsafe at Any Speed. He organized the Green Party, whose platform I don't agree with, but in it, he challenged the duopoly of the two-party system, which I do agree with. He ran in 2000, receiving 2.8 million votes. And so he joins us right now to talk about the trucking situation and his recent book, just out, The 17 Traditions. Ralph Nader, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, which do you want to talk about first?
Well, just a brief on this book. This is the only book I've ever written, Michael, where everybody loves it. It's about...
Well, frankly, I haven't read it, but I see that it's about your childhood in rural Connecticut, the lessons you learned from your family. I didn't know, for example, that your family owned a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
And you really grew up in a small family business. Tell us about it, Mr. Nader.
Well, it's how my mother and father raised their four children in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So it was in the Depression in the 30s, World War II in the 40s, and a small but very constructively contentious factory town in northwest Connecticut. It had a town meeting, form of government, and my dad had a restaurant on Main Street opposite all the textile plants and right next to the Mad River. And they used to say, for a nickel, you got a cup of coffee in Nader's restaurant and 10 minutes of politics, because everybody went there and they talked politics and sports, and they argued about Red Sox and Yankees. And my mother and dad took me to the local county court to watch the trials, took us to the town meeting to watch the citizens connect with their officials. It was a very good incubator for becoming civically active to try to improve our country. And the book has been
So you grew up in literally the Cracker Barrel America, no pun intended, but meaning it's been said that talk radio is the Cracker Barrel. They used to say that of America, where people used to sit and talk politics over a Cracker Barrel. What did you do in your family restaurant, Ralph Nader?
Well, I'd worked almost every job, short order cook and counter and wash dishes. But in the meantime, I just met all kinds of people, traveling salesmen, jurors on lunch break from the county courthouse, all kinds of factory workers and electricians, plumbers, business people. It was really a great opportunity. I mean, today kids look at screens,
they're not
connected with either the nature around their home, the trees, the meadows, the rocks, all this.
But you grew up in rural Connecticut, and so you had a sort of Thoreau part to you as well, apparently?
Yeah, very much so. And the book reflects it. It's just a small book. It's a great gift for parents with young children. I mean, parents today have to deal with the same problems parents years ago deal with them. How do you get the kids to eat right, respect their parents, do their chores, complete their studies, don't fall in the wrong crowd, take care of their health? And this little book, which has been very well received around the country, published by HarperCollins, is a very good gift in that way.
Well, what I find interesting is that you are a lifetime politician. You're a thorn in the side of the establishment, which I can relate to, although politically we're probably opposite in most cases. But nevertheless, as an independent, you've certainly been in the public eye for so long. This is the first book you've ever written, and it's about your family childhood in a restaurant, which I find amazing. Is it because you want to pay back, in essence, give something back to your parents' memory? Is that what motivated it?
I've written many books. This is the first book that's a personal book. And yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't understand. Yeah, because I know you wrote Unsafe at Any Speed and other books. You're saying this is the first personal book.
My mom and dad really did a great job, and they were active citizens. They never drew a line, Michael, between family values, civic engagement values in the community, and business values. That was all a seamless status of character and personality. My father...
All right, so what you call this book, The 17 Traditions, which I'm going to ask you about in a minute, but I know many of my listeners are fuming about the Mexican truck debacle. And I wish we could speak about it for a few minutes, because I agree with the Teamsters on this. It's amazing to me that both the left and the right agree on this. How come there's been no public debate about Mexican trucks rolling across America?
It's on the minds of a lot of people, and not just truckers who are listening to this program now. It's the result of NAFTA. NAFTA, which was passed in the early 90s, to open up extensive trade between Canada, U.S., and Mexico, involved opening up the borders to each other's trucks. Well, you know, I mean, first of all, the standards for Mexican trucks in the 90s, you could drive a truck at age 18. You didn't have to have a medical exam or test for drugs. You didn't have to have training in the particular rig that you were driving. And this was in contrast to the U.S., where you had to be 21, you had to be trained in the rig, and you had all kinds of checkups and so on. Well, over the years, people in Washington, are one of our groups, Public Citizen, the Teamsters, the Sierra Club, all got together to fight it, because it was very, very hazardous to allow Mexican trucks into 50 states that didn't meet the maintenance standards or the safety standards. So then the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, pushing to open up the Mexican, what we call the NAFTA trucks from Mexico, began to say, okay, the Mexican-U.S. authorities have harmonized these standards. They're all improved. Mexican trucks in Mexico are going to be inspected regularly. But it's all nonsense. And the Office of Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation, even a few days ago, pointed out that there are all kinds of differences between the medical qualifications, the database on drug and alcohol testing, the hours of service, truck certification of vehicle safety compliance, and the enforcement level. Now, our federal motor vehicle carrier agency can't even inspect U.S. trucks. I mean, it's really a big scandal. And now they're going to be diverted to try to inspect the thousands of Mexican trucks coming in. Just a couple days ago, a Mexican truck, which was in Mexico, which was passing a passenger vehicle, blew up. It had 22 tons of explosives, and about 50 people were killed and many injured. And it's going. The investigation is already showing all kinds of violations that they weren't licensed. For example, that truck was not licensed for carrying explosives. Not a minor thing.
But how does How does an administration, whether it be the Clintons or the Bushes, how do they do this without any congressional debate? That's the part I don't understand.
Not only that, you can't even go to U.S. courts under NAFTA and turn it over. There was an attempt, and the courts threw it out. There have been hearings, Michael. There have been congressional hearings. That's what's actually held it up. There are a lot of people in Congress against it. And the proof of that is last night, the Senate adopted an amendment by Senator Dorgan, Democrat, Senator Spector, Republican, by 75-23, cutting off funds from the Department of Transportation to prevent them from initiating a pilot program with 100 Mexican truck companies that they were about to open the borders to. So I think right now the Department of Transportation, being criticized by its own inspector general in detail, and with the this vote in the Senate, is going to think twice about moving forward with this pilot project. But I have another.
But wait. Duncan Hunter, Congressman Duncan Hunter, was on this show the other day, and he raises a different question about trucks coming in from Mexico. He said, what about the possibility of them carrying drugs or smuggling illegal aliens? How is that going to be looked into?
It's a real possibility, because the U.S. Department of Transportation doesn't have the manpower and doesn't have the resources to check these trucks. They can spot check them, they can random check them, but they don't even check enough U.S. trucks, much less the trucks from Mexico. But I have another problem, and this is this. It's unfair for U.S. labor to open a border to trucks from Mexico, where the poor truck drivers from Mexico are being paid anywhere from $10 to $15 a day. And they are, in effect, tootling along in California and Texas and Kansas and New Mexico and Montana and New York and Pennsylvania, competing with U.S. truck drivers. That is not fair. We would never allow Alabama or Mississippi or New Mexico to have a special prerogative to pay truck drivers very, very low salaries and then send their trucks out around the country. Why do we allow it with Mexico? It's very unfair. We have to reevaluate all this corporate globalization, revise or repeal these trade agreements so that they are agreements, the new ones, that pull up health and safety and conditions of the rest of the world instead of let the third world pull down our health, safety, and
right.
worker conditions.
I agree. The lowest common denominator seems to be ruling the day. Now, you ran for office more or less as a third-party candidate. In 2000, you received 2.8 million votes. Can we talk about politics for a minute?
Yeah, I just want to tell your listeners one thing. If you want to get more information on this, the two citizen group websites, very, very clear, up to date. One is called trucksafety.org. That's easy, trucksafety.org. And the other is called saferoads.org, saferoads.org.
Okay, truck safety.
Truck safety. Michael?
No, my listeners are fuming over this because it seems to be done in the dark, this whole deal.
A few calls to the simple number the Department of Transportation will give them pause. It's 202, area code 202 in Washington, D.C., 408-1711. Very easy to remember, 408-1711. Let them hear from you, folks.
Oh, they will. If I start this on the website, they'll hear from them. So in 2000, you run on the third-party ticket. You don't have a lot of money. You get 2.8 million votes of people who are fed up with the two-party duopoly. Let me ask you what you think of this. I've never run for office, and I doubt that I ever will. But on my website, I put up a little poll that says, should Michael Savage leave radio and run for office? I have 18 million people who have gone on the website and said, leave radio and run for office. What if 18 million people voted for a third-party candidate? Would that affect the election, and how would it do so, Ralph Nader?
First of all, I would open up the debate to broader issues than the two parties want to discuss. You know, you could probably make a list the length of your forearm on all of this.
Well, I could. Borders, language, and culture would be the theme of the debate. I don't think I'd get past the first one.
Second of all, it would raise this pernicious Presidential Debate Commission, which is created by the two parties, funded by their corporate buddies, to keep out any competition and any diverse voice and choice for the American people. And that's the only way you can reach tens of millions of people, because those are the only debates that the television networks will relay to the folks. And then third, it'll open up the obstruction of third-party candidates from getting on the ballot in states all over the country. There are 50 state laws, different rules, all kinds of massive signature petitioning.
Yes.
The two parties can basically invalidate on trivial nonsense grounds tens of thousands of signatures and keep you off the ballot.
Well, we'll talk about that another time. I want to take a quick break and come back only to your book, The 17 Traditions, about your childhood in Connecticut, the life-sustaining principles you learned from your family, the restaurant that your family owned. I did not know that, how you learned about work, community, and basically how to run your life through not only your parents, what the parents taught you, the restaurant, the people, and then walking in the woods of Western Connecticut as a little boy in your own solitude, more or less on the level of a Thoreau. I want to know what the 17 traditions are that you're referring to in your title the minute we return right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We are talking about a man who's changed society in many ways, and in some ways, I totally agree. Ralph Nader took on the Goliath of the audio industry with his book on Safe at Any Speed. And frankly, he produced a lot of safety features in our cars today, and that's just the beginning of it. And he's written a personal book, The 17 Traditions, about his childhood, and he wants to talk with you about it. He comes from a Lebanese Christian background, which I think is extremely interesting and enriching. And I read Khalil Gibran, for example, of the one Lebanese Christian authors that I'm familiar with, as most Americans, it would be Khalil Gibran. But let's talk with Ralph Nader right now on the Savage Nation. Ralph, welcome back to the Savage Nation. What are these 17 traditions that you refer to?
Well, you can see they resonate with people. The first one is tradition of listening. My mother would tell us repeatedly, if you talk all the time, you're not going to learn anything. You have to listen, and then you'll learn. And so it's important for kids today who tend to dominate the household with their chatter. There is also a tradition of health. She taught us how to take care of ourselves when we were down with the childhood diseases. We tend to listen to her advice a little more intensely. There was a tradition of history. They would tell us the back stories of history around the world and in our country. They never overloaded us with goods and goodies. There's a tradition of scarcity, so we could appreciate what we had and take care of it and repair it. A tradition of sibling equality. They never favored one child over another, knowing the devastating impact it would have on the disfavored child. There was a tradition of education argument. They would engage us in argument about public issues of importance. They never let us run away from an argument. There's a tradition of discipline. They never struck us. They felt that was atrocious to hurt us, and a reflection on them. Instead, they gave us a look, and if the look didn't work, they tossed an Arabic proverb at us. Just the right kind of proverb.
Oh, I know about that evil eye. Believe me, I don't think it's limited to your background. I know what one look from a stern father can do to a kid.
There was a tradition of charity. It wasn't just feeding hungry people in the Depression who came in my dad's restaurant. It was showing all the things around the town that were started by philanthropists, from the hospital to the library to the high school. It was an amazing little tour my father took me in his car that I describe in the book. Of course, the tradition of work. We had to do our chores. The tradition of business. And business was not just for profit and greed. It was being a service to the community. A tradition of patriotism, which was not just swinging the flag. It was basically working to improve your country and recognizing the last words of the Pledge of Allegiance, which is furthering liberty and justice for all. They also let us alone and gave us our solitude. There's a tradition of solitude described in the book. Kids often today are too overscheduled. And, of course, a tradition of civics and independent thinking. So those are some of the, and they also learned from us as well as taught us.
You know, I've been making a note, Ralph, about these, because if someone said to me, can you make a list of things I should teach my child to help them grow up into a sound adult? I could never have done as good a list as you did in your book. These are wonderful. They're beautiful. And frankly, I think it's a book that I would like to give to people. I think it's great. And I never get as enthusiastic about other people's books because it's just not my nature to do so. But this sounds like the real business. This is really good. But, you know, you've been around a pretty long time. So you did this because you feel this is your greatest legacy, is to pass this on?
Well, I think it's just wonderful to encourage other parents to put down their traditions for their children from their great-grandparents, grandparents. We have a website to encourage that called 17traditionsspelledout.com, inviting people to send us a tradition or two to get the ball rolling. Because most families have real nuggets of wisdom, insight, experience that are lost forever.
Well, I think I'm going to do a whole hour of my show following up on this at another time on what are the traditions you've raised your children by. I think that'd be great. But in the interim, Ralph, I'm almost out of time. Ralph Nader, it's been a gigantic treat for me to have you on the program, and I know your book's going to jump on Amazon tonight, because no matter what they say about Michael Savage and his audience, they buy books. The 17 Traditions by Ralph Nader. Thank you so much for being with us on the Savage Nation. I got to remind everybody, by the way, that in the next hour, we have a wonderful fill-in for me, because I have to be somewhere, and that is Rick Roberts. For the next full hour on the Savage Nation, it is Rick Roberts. And for all of my listeners out there who were raised in a tradition of Judaism, and then perhaps those of you who recognize that Christianity descends from Judaism, and for those enlightened Muslims who recognize that Islam came along after both Judaism and Christianity, and that there is learning from each religion into the third, I want to remind you that tonight in the Jewish calendar, it moves in the lunar calendar from 5767 to 5768. And in the 6,000 long years, those who have come against the Jews have all disappeared. And as the Bible predicts, they shall continue to disappear. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation. Michael, it's always a privilege and an honor to sit behind this mic when you're away. I thank you so much for that in this particular hour. I've got to tell you, I've been listening. I've had the luxury of listening to Michael throughout the broadcast. My show is done very early in the morning. And a lot of the stories that Michael was touching upon, that leftist protest at the site yesterday, all of that you can see on michaelsavage.com. www.michaelsavage.com. I was just there myself, as a matter of fact. And if you were listening, you know that Michael was talking to Ralph Nader. Of course, you know, what can I say about Ralph Nader that you don't already know or that you didn't hear? But he was talking about the Mexican trucks pouring into the United States. Now, I've talked about this ad nauseum, but I've got to touch on this again. Even though the headline reads, Senate blocks Mexican trucks on the U.S. highways, you have to look at this thing. I will believe it when I see it. I interviewed the vice president of the Teamsters, Jim Santangelo, yesterday, and we talked about this at length. And as Ralph Nader just told Michael, the Teamsters, other organizations, Sierra Club and so on, they're trying to hold the line. But the line will not be held unless you hold it. You know, I've had so many people saying, you know, Rick, why don't you and Michael Savage and all these other talk show hosts get together and unify and so on. Well, here's the bottom line. You hold the power. You always have. You hold the power. You just stuck the sweeping amnesty bill, back inside the Beltway where it belongs, where it's the stuff of political ambition in their dreams. We didn't want to legalize and legitimize upwards of 15 to 20 million lawbreakers. We didn't want that, even though the president, whom I voted for twice, and the president that is also responsible for me being an independent and no longer a Republican, even though Presidente Jorge Bush wanted that in the worst possible way, he didn't get it. And he didn't get it because it was against the will of the people, just like this Mexican trucking bill. Now, please, for the love of God, do not tell me this is beneficial. This is beneficial to the American populace. It's not. You know, as Michael was saying just a moment ago, we can't even check the trucks that we've got here now. How are we going to check 100 trucking companies? We're not talking about 100 trucks. Somebody actually called me and said, well, Rick, it's only 100. No. It's 100 Mexican trucking companies. How many trucks do those individual companies control? I have no clue. But I've been told, Rick, don't worry about it. We're going to check it. Rick, don't worry about it. They're going to be safe. We're going to check out the drivers. We're going to do background checks. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Well, excuse me. if you're going to do that, why don't you start with the illegals that are already here instead of importing them? Well, even though I am probably the furthest thing from a union supporter, I'm not. I despise unions for the most part. I do agree with Jim Santangelo, vice president of the Teamsters. This will be a further nail in the coffin to American sovereignty, security, and sanctity. It's just that simple. It's just that simple. I happen to broadcast. I do a five-hour morning show at KFMB in San Diego, a stone's throw from the Mexican border. Don't tell me we don't have a problem. I maneuver through it every single morning about 4 a.m. to get to the broadcast studio. Trying to get to my studio is like a wide shot from Escape from New York, the old movie. I mean, you got burning cars over here, you got people sleeping. Okay, it's not that bad, but you get the picture. And please don't tell me, well, the illegals, look, I tell you what, sport, go get a van. We can fill it up 15 times before breakfast. Please don't look at me and say, hey, listen, you need to talk about homeland security. You mean homeland insecurity. We can't even check the people we have here now. How are you going to check literally tens of thousands of trucks? You're not. You never intended to. It's another bone thrown to the constituency. You know it, and I know it. Let's be honest about it, shall we? No. The Mexican trucking bill has to be stopped, and the only people that can stop it are listening to this broadcast right now, the Savage Nation. You hold the power you always have. The politicians have tried to convince you that you don't. The politicians have tried to convince you that unless you align with them in some form or fashion that you can't get anything done. It's a lie. There's a cross sitting at a 50-foot cross sitting atop the Mount Soledad in San Diego that says that's a lie. Jessica's Law is on the ballot because that's a lie. 20 million illegals are still illegal because that's a lie. You do hold the power, and you will make the difference, but you got to be moved. And that's what Michael Savage does every single day. I try to, in my way, to make a difference, to let you know that you hold the power. Mexican trucks pouring into this country. Forgive me, Presidente Jorge Bush. I withdrew my name from the Republican rolls as a silent protest because, on one hand, you talk about the war on terror, which I support. As long as boots are on the ground, I am obligated as a free American to support every man in uniform. Whether I agree with the conflict or not is not the issue. I will, and I do support every single man in the military and woman in the military. When boots are off the ground, then I have the luxury of going to town with you verbally. That's not the issue. But don't tell me there's a war on terror. Don't tell me to be afraid, very afraid. Don't tell me about, well, we're now green or blue or plaid or striped or whatever the new color of the day is. Please, for the love of God, Mr. Chertoff, do not look at me with a straight face. One day I can't defend the borders unless you give me an amnesty bill. You know that George Bush, I don't know if you've met him, a great guy. Ding, yeah, he's a wonderful, wonderful individual. But I can't protect us. I can't do anything without an amnesty bill. When it became obvious that wasn't going to happen. Well, okay. Maybe I can secure the border, but we need to let those Mexican trucks. Excuse me. What homeland is it that you are protecting? Is it the United States of America, great place, I'm told, or is it Mexico? Which is it? Make up your mind. You can't tell me on one hand, we have a war on terror and I need to support everything you do, and I have. And then on the other hand, we've got a tsunami wave of illegals pouring into this country in the southern border. Well, what about Canada? What about Canada? We're not talking about Canada. You know, this president tried to sell off the ports in Dubai. He tried to sell the sovereignty deal, the blanket amnesty, and now the Mexican. The only feasible explanation for any of this is the North American Union. And please don't tell me I'm thinking about black helicopters hovering just above cloud cover, spying on my air. Oh, Rick, you conspiracy. No, it's not a conspiracy. It's on the government's website. That's what it is. We have to fulfill. What was it Pelosi said? Oh, talk about an empty head. What was it she said? It's time for us to fulfill a long overdue promise to Mexico. Excuse me? Well, since when should I be concerned about fulfilling a promise to either? They're talking, of course, about NAFTA. You just heard Michael Savage and Ralph Nader talking about that. They're talking about a provision in NAFTA that says, okay, now we got to let the trucks roll in. Well, how about this? How about up until recently, Mexico wouldn't extradite cop killers? I don't do business. I don't want to do business with people that harbor cop killers. I don't want to do business with people that encourage their people to break our immigration laws. I don't want to do business. And when I say do business, you do business too, whether you know it or not, every April 15th. I don't want to do business with a corrupt country that keep their people in abject poverty, that force their people to swim a river, climb a mountain, hike a desert just to put a sandwich in their kid's face. Why should I do business with those people? And why should I be concerned about fulfilling a promise? I'm not. And if that were really the agenda, this government would not be concerned with it either. But there is a much, much larger agenda. You know it. You listen to the Savage Nation. You know what I'm talking about. We were born at night, but not last night. You have to stop this bill. The Senate has blocked it temporarily. I think I heard Ralph Nader talking to Michael Savage just a moment ago. It was either 75-23, 74-24, whatever it was. And all of you high and mighty, righteous, pious, yes, I'm a Republican, amen, God bless America. 22 of the 23 people that voted not to block it were Republicans. They voted for the Mexican trucks. The Republican Party just simply hasn't caught on to the fact they're sending the Republican Party into a suicide dive. You want to get your Republican Party back? You want to try to mend the fractionalized party that was once the GOP? You're not going to do it this way. Well, Rick, see, here's the deal. We figure get a bunch of the Mexicans up here and we get them all, get them a voter card and pick them up in a bus, bring them on back. We'll take Congress back. It didn't work, did it? It won't work. The American people, that vast sleeping giant, the silent majority, the silent majority, they're wide awake and they're upset and they have every right to be. The man they voted for twice is selling out the sovereignty, sanctity, and security of this nation. And when I look in the face of my children, it upsets me just a tad, just a skosh. That's a good old Southern term. There's a colloquialism for you. Just a skosh. I'm upset. Mexican trucks, we don't want you here. Well, you're a racist. You're a bigot. No, I'm not. I just don't want to deal with the havoc and the murder and mayhem on the highways. If you don't believe me, take a look around. Take a look at the DUI statistics on illegals. It's a different culture. I didn't say it was worse. I didn't say it was better. I just said I don't want it. It's a different way of living. It's a different set of standards, a different benchmark, high watermark. I don't know. You fill in the blank. As a matter of fact, I'll let you fill in the blank. You know, I've said everything on this I can say other than please get up. I include myself in this number. We need to get up off of our collective butts and call the Department of Transportation and say, hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm an American, a legal one. Doesn't matter your point of origin, your ethnicity, your theology. None of that matters. It just happens, you know, if you're legal, if you're a legal citizen, let them know that first. They're probably keeping track. Hi, I'm a legal U.S. resident of the United States or the country formerly known as the United States of America, unless we can get you guys out of office in time to preserve it. I'd like to voice my opinion on Mexican trucks rolling through America. Stop it already. What's wrong with you? You want me to go through the list of the dead and dying and maimed and injured at the hands of illegals? Now, I don't have that much time, number one. But number two, you want to compound the problem. You can't check the trucks. What's in the trucks? Couldn't be drugs, could it? Couldn't be illegals, could it? Mr. President, President Jorge Bush, what is it? Are they just full of people here to do jobs Americans won't do? Is that it? Oh, well, shoot, let them go. We'll take your calls. This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. 1-800-449-8255. That's 1-800-449-TALK. I'm Rick Roberts in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. All right, 24 minutes after the hour, I'm Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity. Once again, it's always a pleasure and an honor to be behind the microphone. You heard Michael Savage interviewing Ralph Nader. You heard Ralph Nader talking about the Mexican trucks rolling into the United States. You heard that the Senate has vowed to block the Mexican trucks. What about Presidente Jorge Bush? What's he up to? Going to veto this thing? Can he veto? What's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. You're going to have to get busy, just like you did on the amnesty bill. Let's go to Chicago, WIND. Greg, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing? First-time caller. Yeah.
Thank you.
The drivers coming across the border ain't the only problem I see is bringing drugs and stuff. But what about the drivers themselves? They get across, they're illegal immigrants. Why not, what's to stop them from just dumping their garbage truck on the highway and taking a walk?
Nothing.
You know?
And it will happen. It will happen, Greg. Not that you're a prognosticator. I'm sure you're not. But it's going to happen. And probably, the back of that trailer is going to be full with aunts, uncles, nieces, little Juan in the burrow that he carries the coffee beans down. I don't know, but you get the point. What about the drivers themselves? Are they at the same standard, the same level, the same competency as American drivers? No, not according to the vice president of the Teamsters, I picked him apart. I'm not a union guy, so I was on him hard. This is bad for America, just like amnesty was bad for America. This is bad for America. And what did I heard one of the politicians, oh, it's going to be great. Now we can go to Mexico, too. This allows Mexican truckers. I tell you what, anybody out there within the sound of my voice in the Savage Nation, You independent operators, you want to take your rig south of the border, you better have a safety courtesy patrol along, because you will be hijacked, your rig will be taken, your goods or whatever it is you've got in that trailer is going to be sold on the black market, and if you're lucky, they won't hold you for ransom. No, so you know, what are you talking about, banditos? Yes, see, bandito, San Francisco, KNEW, Joe. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Two words, hell no. Anybody who's ever driven and gotten their commercial license know that license is their meal ticket, and it is earned in blood. Just $10 to $15 for the whole day, this is going to slaughter us. I mean, San Francisco Class B driver like myself is maybe $14-15 an hour for the guys, and you got to work 12-hour days just to break even.
And you'll be history, Joe.
At some
point, you'll be history. You will be in line to try and take one of those jobs Americans won't do, according to Presidente Jorge Bush. You know, the whole jobs Americans won't do unplugged tour that our president went on 6 months before you finally put your foot down. Yeah, you'll be in line, along with the rest of us. You'll be in the line looking for a job that an American won't do. You'll be looking for a job that a Mexican trucker won't do. New York, WOR, Lillian. Lillian, welcome to the Savage Nation. Hi.
My question to you, I want to be sure I heard you correctly. There is a block, the Senate put a block on the rolling Mexican trucks. And you might
yes.
ask, why does a female call? I'll tell you why. I travel the interstate, and Texas is one of the states that I go to. I travel 2,500 miles for pleasure, back and forth.
Well, Lillian, I want to tell you something. And I would tell this. I would tell this to a member of my family. I would tell this to my greatest friend. If you are a female and you are driving the highways and byways of this great nation, if the Senate is overturned on this thing, you're not safe on the roads, not by yourself. And I'm not trying to be an alarmist. I'm a realist. I broadcast every morning from San Diego. You don't want to be on the roads with these people. You're in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation. And as always, don't want to let a moment go by without thanking Michael for the honor and opportunity to be in when he is away, and thank you so much for being along on the Savage Nation. Earlier, you heard Michael, and by the way, you can get that story and a lot of the other stories Michael was talking about earlier. MichaelSavage.com, pretty easy. Shouldn't have a hard time remembering this. MichaelSavage.com. Check it out. I was just on there a little bit ago, as a matter of fact. All right. Michael was talking with Ralph Nader, and book sounds interesting, doesn't it? 17. But before that, he was talking about his efforts, along with the Sierra Club and so on, to stop the Mexican trucks from rolling into America. Because maybe you know, maybe you don't know, it doesn't matter. NAFTA. There was a provision in NAFTA that has come due. Remember Nancy Pelosi 2 days ago? The time is long overdue to fulfill our promise to Mexico to blah, blah, blah. Well, sweet cheeks, I think Mexico's got a few promises they need to keep to us. All right? Number one, stop pushing your people across the border. They, you know, they print pamphlets to help them do that. Did you know that? Oh, sure. Yeah. That's a whole other story. This is a very specific issue. 100 trucking companies with no limitations on how many trucks, individual trucks, those individual trucking companies can control. They want to allow them free access to the interior of the United States. Right now, I think it's a commercial zone of 20 miles or so. The Senate has tentatively blocked by a vote of 74 to 24. It's either 74, 24, 75, 23, doesn't matter. 22 of the 23 people that voted to allow the trucks in were Republicans. Now, I'm about as conservative as they come, but being a conservative and being a Republican is no longer the same thing, at least not that I've seen in the last couple of years. I've got a hold of a memo I'm going to give you in just a second. If you're driving the fast lane, move over to the shoulder. All right, if you're standing up, sitting down, if you're a nursing mother, please take the appropriate steps so that nothing bad happens. You won't believe this, but first let's go to KSTE, Sacramento, Darren. Darren, thanks for being along on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Thank you, sir. Can I bring some alignment to this topic a little bit about the logistics and how things operate with certain companies in the United States of America?
With certain companies, sure.
For instance, the company I work for, we have terminals located throughout the United States, and I also say Canada and Mexico. So what we do is we take the freight and we repower it from terminal to terminal. Of course, that's in the LTL, less than truckload industry. Then you take a truckload carrier like Swift Transportation, the largest truckload carrier in the nation, and they have another company in Mexico called Transmex, which is the largest carrier in Mexico. And what they do is they take the goods from Mexico, let's say into Laredo, Texas, and they repower from there with Swift, and they take it into the United States.
Okay, Darren, help me out here. Let's pull over to a truck stop, you and me, and give me the punchline here, because I'm confused on this this verbal roadmap where we're going. Well, the bottom line is what?
The bottom line is there's carriers out there, motor carriers out there, that have the capabilities to repower loads with their own equipment from Mexico into the United States and vice versa.
Well, of course, Darren. It's not. Look, this was a gimme of the NAFTA program. It's one of many, by the way. You're going to have to wait to see them all. This is about the United States opening up the borders once again. That's all this is about. You can't tell me that we don't, well, wait a minute. The president told me the beds wouldn't get made, the food wouldn't be cooked, the carpets wouldn't be cleaned, the leaves wouldn't be blown, the fruit wouldn't be picked unless we had a guest worker program, because there's just nobody here that'll do that. And it's the same thing with the Mexican trucks, right, Darren? Well, Darren, sit down, because I got something for you, all right? It was 6 years ago. Now, I went to public school, but I can 1, 2, 3, 4, let's see, carry the 5. That's 6. 6 years ago, 9/11 changed the world, certainly the United States. And one of those changes at the time was an immediate shutdown of the borders for what? 30 minutes? Maybe 45? Then a month or so after the more stringent border patrol was let loose. Then, okay, well, it's not that bad. All right, here we are 6 years later. Our border security is at best a joke. If President Bush has his way, Mexican trucks will continue to be allowed to flow freely across the border. Now I have a memo. Do I have time to do this? Yes, I do. I've got a memo that's been revealed by the Washington Times. They got it. Somebody else got it. I got a hold of it. I want you to listen to this. There's a new term, and if Michael will allow me, I'd like to introduce into the Savage Nation. It's called abbreviated national security. Say it together. Let's do it together, shall we? All right, just so we can all... Abbreviated National Security. ANS, Abbreviated National Security. U.S. Customs... Now, remember, keep this in mind. Yeah, Mexican trucks are going to be coming in here. It's going to be just Mexican trucks, this, that. You know, and then we're not talking about the little mini pickups with 17 refrigerators in the back tied with a piece of string that are swaying to and fro at 60 miles an hour down the Interstate 15 or I-5. We're not swinging back and forth like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. We're talking about 18-wheelers. Well, they should have 18. Most have 15 to 16. But here's what we're talking about. On August 16th, there was a memorandum from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers in Texas, El Paso Field Office. Attention, Director Luis Garcia, directing agents to limit inspections of vehicle and pedestrian border crossers as wait times escalate. Now, wait a second. Hang on a minute. I've got it right here. It was in all the newspapers. My president told me, there it is. Maybe it's on the back. No, page 2. My president told me they were going to inspect all the payloads. My president, they were going to do background checks. My president, what's that? Oh, not everybody, huh? Here's the memo. If wait time is 45 minutes or less, officers are required to ask questions of all drivers and passengers older than 18 and ensure that the license plate is correct. Okay. If wait time is 45 to 60 minutes, customs officers are to query only the driver and half of the passengers. Also, if wait time at the border, and we're talking about all the ports of entry into this country, borders, right? If the wait time is 45 to 60 minutes, the customs officers are to query only the driver, half of the passengers, and the officers are not to conduct compartment checks and density meter readings used to find contraband. If wait time is 60 to 120 minutes or more, and by the way, I checked, that's the average wait time. Again, I told you I do a morning show at KFMB in San Diego. Every traffic report that is given during my morning show, we get a wait time at the border. The average wait time into the United States is 60 to 120 minutes. That would be contained in part three of the memo. If wait time is 60 to 120 minutes or more, they are to ask questions only of the driver and make a note of the license plate. No queries to the passengers, no compartment checks, no density meter readings. At 30 to 40 minutes of wait time, the Border Patrol agent said they were asked querying the driver only at the request of the supervisors. In El Paso, an agent said, basically, we're only running the documents of the driver every fifth vehicle, so everyone else is coming in without being checked by the same standard. Even if you stick with the letter of this memo, it falls way short of the national security purpose. Note to terrorists. Wait until the border wait time is 60 to 120 minutes. Hell, you could herd 50 camel across and nobody would say anything. Do you see how ludicrous this is? And it's not one talk show host's opinion. We're talking about the security, the sanctity, and the sovereignty of this great nation that many of your fathers, your grandfathers fought, died, bled, and sacrificed for. And it's all being blown away by one globalist administration. KLUP, San Antonio, Texas. James, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hi, I'm a long-haul truck driver, and I'm really worried about this whole situation that years down the line, my job is going to be in danger. Right now, if they let the Mexican trucks come in, they're going to take my job away from taking the cargo from the border to the destination and from the destination back to the border. Eventually, China's going to come in. They're going to start shipping their cargo containers to Mexico. All those containers are going to be shipped up through Mexico. Mexican trucking companies are going to operate it, and they're going to go all the way into the United States and back, and I'm going to end up losing my job.
You're going to be in line, James. You're going to be standing in line waiting for a job that a Mexican won't do. That's basically what you're going to be doing. No, Rick, you hate Mexicans. I don't hate Mexicans. I don't hate any ethnicity. You know, I try to judge a man by the character that he exudes, that he displays. I was raised by my grandparents, God rest their soul, and, you know, my grandfather was not an exceedingly intelligent man when it came to academics, but he was the salt of the earth when it came to common sense. You hire on with a man, you give him a day's work and then some. You look a man in the eye, if you do what you say you're going to do, if you can't, you tell him and you make it up. Don't tell me there are jobs that Americans won't do. I'm telling you right now, James, do you hear the urgency in my voice? Do you hear my frustration bubbling over into my dialogue? You hear it, don't you? I can feel it. I mean, I can feel it. Just raw emotion. I can see the sovereignty of this country. I can. It's just like I'm touching the sleeve of my shirt right now. There's a texture. There's a feeling as it goes through my fingertips up into my arm and is acknowledged by my brain. It's the same thing. The sovereignty of this country is slipping away hour by hour, day by day, week by week, month by month. You've got a president that is working directly against the will of the people, and I'm a conservative. But that no longer necessarily means a Republican. I support my president as commander-in-chief, and I will until every pair of boots is off the ground. But when it comes to selling out the sovereignty of this country, first, it was the amnesty. The American people said no. Nope, no amnesty. Now it's the Mexican trucking thing. The American people must say no. I just got the feeling D.C. doesn't think you have one more fight in you. They don't think you have one more fight in you. They don't think you're going to come out like you came out against this amnesty thing. I think you will. Because we live here. We live in this reality. These are our cities, our communities, our homes. This is, it's a cliche, but it's our land. And you can't have it. It's not for sale. And we should know. We're the owners. San Antonio. I appreciate the call very, very much. I don't mean to get so emotional about this, but it's an emotional topic. It's an emotional topic, and please don't tell me, well, Rick, it's a fair playing field because we get to go to Mexico, too. Ask any long-haul trucker, do they want to go to Mexico? Now, without bodyguards, they don't. They don't want to be hijacked, their rig taken, their goods taken. And if they're lucky, they'll be sent walking and not held for ransom. All right. KLUP, Joe, Joe, how are you doing?
Fine. How are you, sir?
Doing all right.
Very unfair.
Excuse me? I can barely hear you, Joe. Can you speak up for me just a little bit?
How about now?
That's better. Thank you.
Okay. There's a million Americans living in Mexico very happily. How about all the filth that we sell to Mexico? Pornography, for starters. What about all these thousands and thousands of jobs that Mexicans have lost because of American imports? It's a two-way street, mister. It's a two-way street. And for you to make...
Well, you don't have to call me, address me that way. You can call me Rick if you like, Joe. I'm not exactly sure what your point is. You're telling me about all the ills of a third-world corrupt country. That's common knowledge. What is it you're trying to say to me?
You know what corruption is? Enron was corruption. You know what is corruption? The subprime lending is corruption. It's creating economic trouble.
Okay, Joe, if I'm to, forgive me, Joe, I don't mean to cut you off, but if I'm to understand your point, it is that age-old five-year-old argument, well, Johnny did it, why can't I do it too? The two wrongs justify or cancel out or something? Is that what you're saying? I'm not sure what you're telling me, Joe.
You make it sound like we are the victims. We're not the victims. We're part of the problem. We might be the problem, Mister Rick.
Well, Joe, I disagree with you. If you want to look at, if you want to compare, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. If you want to look at statistics, yeah, we are the victims, Joe. Our economies have been victimized. Our hospitals, our emergency rooms, our infrastructures have been victimized. Look, I got nothing against trying any dad trying to feed his kid, but I got a lot of problems doing business with a third world corrupt government that oppresses its people to the point they risk life and limb to come to another country just to feed themselves. I understand that, and I'm empathetic to that. But by the same token, Joe, I don't know where you live, but if you and I shared an apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, the entire block couldn't come to our house every night and have dinner and stay over, could they? There wouldn't be room for anybody. Nothing would get done. It's a very, very, very easy problem to solve. Very easy, Joe. Enforce the laws on the books when it comes to borders. Just that easy. I don't want to be in business with Mexico. Most Americans don't want to be in business with Mexico. Is this government corrupt? Of course it is. Every government's corrupt to some level. But that doesn't justify what this administration is doing to the citizens of America. I'm Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Savage. Rick Roberts, in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you once again for the opportunity. Always an honor to sit behind your microphone when you're away. And thank you so much for being along in the Savage Nation. A little earlier, Michael was talking with Ralph Nader, Nader of Sierra Club, the Teamsters. A lot of people coming up in support of the Senate blocking these Mexican trucks from the U.S. highways. But, you know, it's not over. It's not over. 22 of the 23 people that voted to allow the Mexican trucks into this country were, hands, everybody, yep, Republicans. Now, when was the last time you thought you're going to be saying, thank you, Democrats, thank you so very much? The Republican Party just doesn't get it anymore. And really, you know, I can't be bothered with that. It's certainly time for a third party. There's no doubt about that. But that's a separate and aside issue for another show. The bottom line is, please don't tell me that this is a good deal because we get to go to Mexico. You know, I warn everybody. I do a morning show in San Diego. I warn everybody, don't go to Tijuana. Excuse me. It's not pronounced Tijuana, I was told one time. It's Tijuana, all right? Don't go to Tijuana unless you want your women raped, your vehicle impounded. Actually, impound's the wrong word. That implies it's taken to a police headquarters. It's basically taken. They'll shake you down, and that's it. You know, welcome to Mexico. It's a third world country. That's what it is. I mean, look around. They oppress and shake down their own people. You don't have a chance. So please don't tell me the independent operators are going to be lined up around the block at San Ysidro border crossing. Oh, I can't wait to get into the bowels of that third world country. Let's see. If the corrupt government doesn't get me, or the corrupt military doesn't get me, or the corrupt police don't get me, or the Felix cartel, if they don't get me, I don't know. Maybe I'll just run off a road they forgot to finish. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Norfolk, Virginia, WNIS. Patty, thank you for waiting, and welcome to the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much. I would like to say I drive for a living. I'm a sales rep, and I know how truckers can be. You have your good and you have your bad. But if you allow the Mexicans to cross that border who have no regulations, no anything like we have here in this country, we have really gone to hell in the handbag. I am scared to death because it's bad enough when they get behind the wheel, especially on the Eastern Shore where you have a lot of crop pickers and things, and who, when they start drinking, you better get off the highway because I don't know how many people they've killed over there.
Patty, you're absolutely right, and I can hear the collective groan from people. Patty, she's a racist. No, she's not a racist. She's telling you the truth. I can give you a list that would take a three-hour show of people that have been impacted by illegal drivers in this country. Well, Rick, other people drive. It's not a case. You're taking two wrongs and trying to get them to cancel each other out. It doesn't work that way. We've got enough problems. Why import it? That's the problem. And you're not gonna convince me that we're gonna check all the truck drivers. We're gonna check their payloads. We're gonna check their vehicles to make sure they're safe. It's not going to happen. I know. I live it every single morning. You've got to get motivated. You got to get moved. You got to pick up the phone, call the Department of Transportation. Hi, I'm a legal U.S. citizen. No, thank you. That's all you have to do. You got to do it time and time and time again. Listen, thank you so much, Michael. This is Rick Roberts in for Michael Savage, and you're on. Oh, the Savage Nation.